Okay. Good afternoon. Today I'd like to make some brief comments about the Fonterra situation and the next steps in terms of inquiries and getting some answers, both for New Zealanders and our international trading partners, around how and why this occurred. But first, I welcome the news today that Nutricia has narrowed its recall for its two affected product lines to those produced between the 21st of May 2013 and the 2nd of August 2013 inclusive. This will allow Nutricia to restock supermarkets with infant formula from these two product lines that parents can have absolute confidence in is not affected by potential contamination and is safe for their babies to consume. The restock is likely to occur from this afternoon, and this move is supported by the Ministry of Primary Industries. So coming back to next steps, earlier today you will have seen Fonterra announce the details of its own review into botulism contamination. Its inquiry will be led by Sir Ralph Norris, and he will be assisted by retired former High Court Judge Dame Judith Potter and Chapman Tripps QC Jack Hodder. Fonterra advises this review will start immediately and it intends to have it completed within 6 weeks. It's important for Fonterra to undertake its own inquiry of its business procedures, systems and practices so it can report back to customers and its farmer shareholding base on its handling of the issue and the lessons it has learned. Alongside this, the Ministry of Primary Industries, as the regulator, today also announced the next steps of its compliance investigation into the contamination incident. The purpose of MPI's compliance investigation will be to determine whether the regulatory requirements were met by all the parties involved, or whether any of the parties have committed any breaches or offences under the governing legislation, the Food Act and the Animal Products Act. This will include decisions made by all parties and their responses, including during the production of the affected whey protein concentrate and from the anomalies in testing that initially arose. Maximum penalties for breaching regulation under these acts range from $100,000 to $500,000 and up to 12 months imprisonment, depending on the nature of any offence. The compliance investigation is in its early stage and will take some time to work through given the complexity of the issue and the number of companies involved. MPI will have a large team of experienced people, at least 20 working on the investigation, but it will take some time, 3 to 6 months, for a full and thorough investigation to be completed. Today, Cabinet discussed how a ministerial-level inquiry might sit alongside the MPI investigation. It's important that government considers all issues in relation to the matter beyond the compliance issues that will be directly investigated by the regulator. We will therefore hold our own independent inquiry, and it needs to be credible in the eyes of the public and in the eyes of our international trading partners. What shape and substance this inquiry will take needs further work, and we expect to decide the form of it and the terms of reference at Cabinet next Monday. It's important that we get this right while ensuring we don't cut across what the regulator is doing. The government has a number of options available to it. One is a commission of inquiry and the other is a ministerial inquiry. Under the current legal framework, a ministerial inquiry lacks the capacity to call witnesses and evidence, which is clearly unacceptable in this context. To ensure a ministerial-level inquiry has the right powers, the government is looking to swiftly progress the Inquiries Bill through the remainder of its parliamentary stages. The legislation will create what's called a government inquiry, which has the legal powers necessary to conduct an inquiry of this nature. It also offers a more streamlined process. While we haven't made a final decision, ministers are erring on the side of a ministerial or government inquiry rather than a commission of inquiry. History tells us a commission of inquiry will take a significant period of time. In the meantime, over the coming days, ministers will be considering who should conduct the ministerial inquiry and identifying highly experienced people for the panel with a combination of relevant commercial and technical experience. As I stated over the weekend, once these inquiries are complete, I want to be able to travel to China and look down the barrel of their television cameras with the answers to why this happened, give consumers confidence that it's been fixed and that all issues have been identified. Just as you're aware, it's a recess week this week, but in terms of my activities, I'll be in the Waitaki electorate tomorrow, the Waikato electorate on Wednesday, in Auckland on Thursday, and Waimakariri on Friday. Tomorrow, just after midday, Social Development Minister Paula Bennett will be unveiling significant and bold changes to protect our most vulnerable children. The announcements are the culmination of almost 2 years of work, which Paula has driven forward with her trademark energy and enthusiasm. We make no apologies for these changes, which will be controversial to some people, but this is about putting children first and protecting our most vulnerable babies and children. So, questions? Look, it could do, and we'll be taking more advice this week, but one of the issues is that history tells us commissions of inquiry often take a year, maybe even more. That's an awfully long period of time for the government not to be able to go back into that market with the authority of our own inquiry and be able to reassure consumers and international trading partners. So we, on the face of it, are erring on the side of this government inquiry under the new legislation because we think it gives us the same bite as would be available under a commission of inquiry, but with a faster timeline.
How soon would you want to report back?
Well, look, realistically, it's got to be in the matter of months, not years. Now, obviously, we need to get to the bottom of what's taken place. We need all of the information, and we need to be confident that whatever we recommend or any changes that we might propose are right, because we can't have a repeat of this situation. So it is ultimately about the quality of work. But, you know, look, if it was a year from now, you know, you're starting to get pretty close, you know, towards election periods and all of those things, it becomes very challenging for us. So there is some urgency about what we're doing. I think in the perfect world, yes, if we could. But obviously, you know, it will depend a little bit on where it takes us. I mean, obviously, there will be the terms of reference that we'll need to consider and making sure that we've got all the bases covered. Well, firstly, I mean, one of the obvious questions that will be raised as a result of what's taken place is, was this an isolated incident where there was something that went wrong, human error, whatever it might be, or is there a broader systemic issue? I haven't seen any evidence that supports that it's a broader systemic issue because Fonterra have been in the business for a long time, New Zealand's been exporting for a long time, and we've, prior to this point, had a very good record. But in the end, I've just got to be absolutely sure that there isn't something, you know, deeper at play here. Now, that's the purpose of basically having this inquiry, is to be able to say, we are confident we know what went wrong, we are confident that it won't be repeated somewhere else, and move on. There is, I guess, always risk in any business, but the government has to be sure it's got all the systems in place. Yeah. I can't answer that question. I haven't had that advice from them.
This legislation you're talking about, Prime Minister,
yep.
What stage is it at? How soon do you think you could pass it, and would you need to, you'd like to pass it before? Would you have to pass it before doing a government?
Yes, we'd have to pass. Well, we could effectively set up the inquiry, indicate it would be held under this basis, but of course until the legislation was in force, we wouldn't be able to use those powers of subpoenaing people or information. It's had its select committee work applied to it. It's ready to come back to the House. Potentially we could give it a second reading and committee stage reading potentially next week, and then arguably the week after pass it. So it fits within the timescale, we think.
And which parties are supporting it?
I can't answer that. I know we've got a majority for it, but I'd have to check that for you.
Are you willing to, once this inquiry has been done, recommendations have been adopted, you're willing to go to China and stake your reputation on this and say,
Well, there are always caveats because we live in a world where there is always the risk that somebody does something wrong. What I'd be wanting to do is give the Chinese authorities and any other market the absolute assurance that A, the government takes this seriously, B, the government will hold people to account if they make mistakes or they act in a way that's against the law and breaches the law, and thirdly, that we have total confidence in the systems that we have in place. So in reality, there is always a human risk element or someone failing to do their duty or someone who deliberately or otherwise breaches the law. But I think, you know, I need to be able to answer off those first bits, and that's where I need to feel totally comfortable and confident.
What's the biggest priority here? Is it reassuring the international market, or is it making sure that this doesn't happen again? What are you trying to do with
this? Well, I think they're one and the same thing. You have to be absolutely sure that your systems are working as they were designed and that there's no flaws in the system, but equally we need to reassure New Zealand consumers and international consumers. And in the end, reputation of food safety is everything when it comes to what we sell. And there will be lots of parents over the last week or so that will have had their confidence a little shaken. We need to restore that confidence for them, and that's the primary responsibility of not only Fonterra, but actually the government as the regulator.
So is it your plan to book a trip to China for as soon as this inquiry is finished?
Yes, but I mean, of course, you know, in reality, we'll need to get a sense of the timescale, and we'll need to see the inquiry and what it's recommending. But in principle, those things can be put together quite quickly.
And you plan to do that at the end of this year or the start of next year?
That's right, yeah.
How many people would a government inquiry like this end up?
Don't know, quite a few. I mean, the thing is it would have all the power and teeth that you would expect that a commission of inquiry would have had, but arguably not necessarily a narrower focus, because we're looking at the capacity to be able to amend the terms of reference if and when required on an ongoing basis, because sometimes, as we know with these inquiries, it takes you down some path and then all of a sudden something emerges that you want to then go and continue work on. So we want flexibility in that system, but we're confident we've got a way of working through that. But we just can't wait a year or more for answers. Because history tells us that they take a lot longer.
What's the budget of this inquiry?
Don't know that, I'm afraid, at this point.
Isn't this more about the form of what a government inquiry would be? How many people would you appoint
this? Again, all of that will be determined this week. So by Monday, next Monday, I hope to come and say, this is the form, these are the terms of reference, this is the panel. But I'd imagine the panel would have a makeup of a number of people. It may even have some international experts that people can take confidence in. But certainly it'll be more than one person, I would expect.
Sorry, I still understand. We're going to pass legislation before we have this inquiry, and that's going to be quicker than just convening a commission of inquiry.
Yes, because commission of inquiry, on the advice we've had, is likely to take a long period of time. Passing the legislation we can do relatively quickly, and we can set up the terms of reference and establish the inquiry before we actually pass the legislation. That will all work. It's been to the Select Committee, yeah. It's at Select Committee. It's going to be reported back to the House.
So it's a revision to the existing?
Basically, the Inquiries Act hadn't been updated for a very long period of time. I think it's 80-odd years, actually, but it's a long time anyway. And essentially, this was a new piece of legislation that we had that we'd been wanting to progress anyway. That's why it'd gone off and had its first reading and had its Select Committee work done on it. And it was waiting to come back. No, there'll always be those options available, because there will be times where, you know, there'd be a commission of inquiry, the Royal Commission or whatever, and that would be totally appropriate. If you take something like Christchurch or Pike River, I mean, that is fairly obviously, by nature of the incidents that took place and the number of lives that were claimed, the category of a Royal Commission. But where something is a little narrower, then I think it's a ministerial or government inquiry. And I think the other point to make here is that this will be the fourth inquiry. They're all important, but to a certain degree they may well have a bit of overlap. The government needs to control its own inquiry, and effectively it's doing that sitting alongside the regulator.
Do you think it's inevitable that companies that operate in the Animal Products Act and the Food Act are going to end up with less self-regulation? In the same way we've seen people with this health and safety and safety legislation?
I wouldn't want to speculate on that, because to argue that is to argue that the current system isn't working. And I just, as I said earlier, you know, I'll need some clarification and some satisfaction that we don't have a systemic problem, that we just simply have that we just had a one-off incident and there was an explainable reason why it occurred. But neither can I rule out that there are changes that result from this.
So until you get some answers to the proposals for meat certification and inspection
and
self-regulated?
Well, I think it would continue as it is until... No, I don't think so, no.
So do you think so going to China immediately rather than waiting for this inquiry?
I haven't really, and the reason for that is that to be effective, I need to be able to go with confidence and to explain. It's one thing to say, look, I'm terribly sorry this took place, even though it's a private sector New Zealand company. But to have real authority, I need to be able to explain what occurred and to give assurance that the situation's been dealt with and that the system is robust. And yeah, I might have a view that it's an isolated instance, but I can't prove that, and I need to be able to prove that.
Have you consulted with the opposition yet about
this bill? No. The inquiries bill, yes. I mean, it's been through the select committee.
But in order to get through all the stages quickly, you're either going to need urgency or agreement.
That's right, and we might have to take it through under urgency. Only in the select committee, but not in the last 48 hours, no.
So not in the last week or so?
No.
And it's due with Colin's bill, presumably?
I think that's right. I think it might be Chris Finlayson, actually. Look, I don't really know a lot more. I mean, in principle, I mean, we are of the view that that the DCD levels that were measured in New Zealand were at those very low levels. Obviously, there hasn't been DCD applied for a long period of time now, and we're confident our tests were right. But I know that the Minister of Foreign Affairs, Murray McCulley, is speaking to the Sri Lankans and may visit potentially quite soon.
Has any economic analysis been done about the damage?
I haven't seen it. I mean, someone mentioned to me that a bit of work had been done, but... apparently by the Minister of Finance. If it has, it must be very back of the envelope, but he hasn't shared that with me.
How broad do you want this inquiry to go? Do you want to go right out into the systems that MPI has in place as well? Or are you happy with just look at the narrow issues around
it? I don't think we want to get completely bogged down with a whole lot of other things. Well, again, that'll take a very long period of time. So I think we'll be reasonably specific. But obviously we need to cover off the bases to make sure we're not missing something.
Can I just clarify,
he's going to China next week,
yeah.
And he's gone for the Pacific mission this week. And just before he went, he said to me, look, I'm thinking about tacking on a visit to Sri Lanka after the visit to China. We'll be in the same trip, so that would be the end of next week. Yeah. Now, I think that's very preliminary, but he might do it. No, I mean, it's just different. I mean, it's a commission of inquiry has a certain sort of status and has historically been applied to a certain kind of inquiry. We think this arguably is more a ministerial inquiry, given it sits alongside MPI's inquiry and Fonterra's inquiry, and therefore it's not really in that status of a commission of inquiry. But we're not happy with the current law, because the current law, as we know, because we've had experience in recent times of ministerial inquiries, it certainly is not necessarily clear and certainly doesn't allow you to subpoena people and information. The MPI inquiry has responsibilities around a regulator. We have, that's their regulatory responsibility. So they'll be answering all those questions under those two acts to see whether someone's broken the law, whether they followed their legal requirements. We will almost certainly have slightly different terms of reference. And they're yet to be determined.
What powers do you not have at present in a ministerial inquiry?
You can't subpoena people and you can't subpoena information.
By the article of China's Xinhua News Agency last week, I have been quite strongly feeling that that's a really political attack to New Zealand government, to yourself and the Prime Minister. I think that attacking style, like I think Cultural Revolution style, or probably North Korean style, what's the response from New Zealand government or from yourself, please?
Well, newspapers and magazines write editorials every day, and I don't agree with all of them, and some of them can get quite personal. That's just the way it goes. It's the nature of the business. I mean, the reason we take this one seriously is because this is a very big market, and it can potentially have significant influence on the consumers in China. So there's been a lot of, it's not just one particular editorial that the government is observing, it's all of the media reporting in China now, and other markets. Now, one point I would make is I think that that media was turning by the mid to latter part of last week. So social media was certainly becoming a lot more balanced and sympathetic. So was quite a lot of the media coverage in China becoming more sympathetic. Certainly there seemed to be a lot of reassurance taken by the fact that I might visit China. That's one of the things that seemed to turn around social media. And that's because I think they see it as the government taking its responsibilities seriously, us treating people with respect, and the government being as concerned as they might be about the health and welfare of infants.
We believe the voice of Xinhua News Agency is the CCP or the central government of China's voice.
Yeah, well, like I say, I mean, you know, I'm not going to go and, you know, specifically kind of drill down into, you know, the motivations or whatever those are. We just accept it's there and we'll deal with it.
Prime Minister, is the reason that we're changing the rules about ministerial inquiries to do with the fact that the last ministerial inquiry we had went so horribly wrong?
No, it's because we don't think the powers that are currently contained in the ministerial for ministerial inquiries are sufficient. Yeah, I think so.
So compel on pain of what?
Well, you'll have to see the legislation, but you'll be able to get a copy of it sitting in it's been sent off to the Select Committee.
Legislation under urgency to increase ministerial inquiry powers would seem to be quite an extreme step.
We don't think so. Was a result of them selling, I think, the MacArthur windmills in Australia. You know, obviously people need to take their own advice about the health of the company. I mean, obviously it's the next cab off the rank in terms of the mixed ownership model. But, you know, they from time to time acquire assets. It's not the first time they did. Obviously Meridian had the same situation where they made a lot of money, in fact more than this with Southern Hydro. That's not correct. I mean, the board obviously run the company, and the chief executive and management team, and they make their own calls. There was no pressure or influence put on them to sell the wind assets they had in Australia. I think they just decided that they'd made good money. I mean, this is, if Labor's criticising it, then they were also the government when Southern Hydro was sold. No, I think, you know, in the end there will be an offer document. Analysts will go and look at the future cash flow and earnings of the company, and they'll give advice on what they think the price of those shares should be and whether investors should be interested in buying them or not. And they can understand absolutely that a sale of an asset is a one-off impact. They're much more likely to look at the issue around Tiwai Point and Rio Tinto. Well, again, you know, they made a lot more money when they sold Southern Hydro, and I didn't hear Labor saying that.
The press editorial today has some criticisms or questioned the logic behind giving $30 billion to Rio Tinto, but
yep,
not supporting other manufacturers,
yep,
in the South Island that struggled, like Hillside and,
yep,
Allied Mills. What's your answer to that? Why do you support one multinational but not local enterprise?
Well, firstly, the government always, well, not always, the government runs a program of effectively support for companies. So whether it's R&D or other things that we do, we effectively run those programs. Now, except this is different and unusual, and it simply comes down to scale. I mean, the bottom line is the 15% of the electricity market in New Zealand. The advice we had was that if they pulled out overnight, then they had to pay in terms of the electricity, but the impact on jobs, the impact on a smooth transition was likely to be, you know, quite significant. That was one thing. I think the second thing is, my view is that Rio want to remain a long-term participant at Tiwai Point. Now, they don't legally have to, and they've got plenty of capacity to review that, but they were the ones who wanted to stay engaged with Meridian, and it strikes me that Meridian wanted to have them there as a long-term partner. So this is really a bit different from, if you take Hillside, the government tried quite hard to actually sell that asset and just couldn't find a buyer. It was just a vastly different scale issue.
But could you understand the questioning by some of those workers who are laid off at reasonably substantial numbers at places like Allied and so on,
yep,
that the government is helping a multinational but not the local enterprise? I mean, is it just,
yep, Well, it's large, and it's at one level it's a vulnerability of the electricity system that we have one very large customer, but over time you can deal with those issues. So over time you can build the piece of work that Transpower would need to do to make sure you can effectively get that electricity out. Over time you can plan the impacts on the economy. So that is the reality of the situation that you've got quite a different situation. And I mean, I think, look, whatever you do when you're the government in that situation, you'll be criticised. If we let them go to the wall, people would have said, look, for what is a relatively small amount of money compared to the unemployment benefits and all the other things, there were thousands of jobs at stake and the government did nothing. That's what Labor and the Greens would have said, and now they'll criticise us the other way. So you can't kind of win, really.
Yeah. So do you expect Transpower to be pushing ahead fast with that, so that you've got the ability in a few years' time if Rio do intend to pull out, that you're ready to use that power?
Well, it might be prudent for them to do that. I think it's in the order of a couple of hundred million they have to spend if they build that link, but yeah, it might be prudent. Not really. I mean, the facts of life are that we were forced into a point where they needed to make a decision. I mean, they had a new contract. The contract was in place. And, in fact, actually, the government was pretty clear with Rio right from the get-go. We certainly weren't interested in subsidising them for 18 years at the cost of hundreds and hundreds of millions. The deal they signed up to was actually slightly worse than the first deal. And in the end, it was Meridian that was working pretty much with Rio that pushed it over the line.
It's already expected around October.
Yeah, that sort of time frame.
How much cooperation or consultation was there between the government and Meridian as this negotiation went on? Because the Meridian chief executive said that they were done separately, if you like, but wouldn't it have made sense to link the two together for the best outcome for anything?
Yeah, so basically it was done fairly much in isolation, except what happened was we, rightfully so as the owner, said you, Meridian, have the responsibility to negotiate with Rio, or New Zealand Aluminium Smelters, or Pacal, whoever you think the owner was, but essentially the entity, and they did that. It was at the point where Meridian had to go public, you remember some time ago, they came to us and said, we are going to go public, that we can't complete a deal, and so negotiations are ending. And so we said, okay, they said to us, you know, there's potentially a shortfall here which you could theoretically bridge, but there were a lot of other factors and plus a much longer term deal. We said to them, we're not interested in all those other bits. I guess as senior ministers, three or four of us sat around and said, look, if we don't do anything, we'll be criticised for, you know, that small little gap. And so we that's when we engaged in discussion with Rio. That fell over straight away. They pretty much rejected it. And then the company, being Meridian, and Rio re-entered negotiations again. At the end of all of that process, they came back to the government, again with pretty extravagant demands, and the government said no.
Can I ask you about housing? Obviously, a big issue going into the next session.
Yeah.
Will you be announcing anything else over the next year and a half, or are you happy with what you've put out there so far?
Well, we might do. If you're asking me, do I have something in the locker today? Not necessarily, but it's an ongoing, evolving issue. I mean, it's a very complex issue, and there are lots of parts to it. And I think we're actually tackling the bits that will make a difference fundamentally. And you can see that a little bit. You know, house prices are actually easing. There is more supply coming on, and there'll be a lot more over time. And I think in the end, that's likely to be the really big driving forces. But we'll continue to monitor it. It's not a new issue. I know people sort of raise the buzz, but you go anywhere around the world where there's a built-up, you know, metropolitan area, it doesn't really matter whether you go to Sydney or Melbourne or Brisbane. You know, for most of the time, they're arguing the same debates, New York or London or anywhere else. And in fact, there was a big issue under Labor for 9 years. I mean, the reality is they did nothing about it, but it was a big issue. No, well, the issue is different, isn't it? I mean, the house prices went up dramatically under Labor. They spent a long time with a variety of inquiries, mainly led by DPMC, to try and resolve the issues. Actually, what happened was it wasn't really an issue for us in the early days because both the global financial crisis and just the general strength of the economy meant that a lot of first-home buyers in particular weren't confident to go out and buy a house. So even though there was a greatly reduced number of houses being built, that, you know, the pressure wasn't really there. But that started emerging about 12 months ago, and we could see that. And that's really a function of very low interest rates and a much more buoyant and confident economy. Well, it's nonsense, because the things that they're talking about won't work. It's great saying ban foreigners from buying a house, but actually they're not the people that are driving up house prices, and the very person who suggested that policy to everyone, Tony Alexander, makes that point in his own commentary. They say a capital gains tax, but nowhere does capital gains taxes work, and they're excluding three-quarters of all housing. And actually the houses that they're not excluding, quite a number of those people actually do pay tax because they're subject to the current taxes that are there. So they're then saying they're going to build lots of houses. Well, that seems a bit airy-fairy to me. They don't really be able to explain that. So if you think about what we're doing, at least there's a logic coherence of it, and it will actually work. You know, we are making sure that, you know, we're agreeing with Auckland where the pinch point really is, that they have to build this many houses, and if they don't, the governor has lots of authority to consent those homes. We are reforming the Resource Management Act, which is one of the big things that are holding us back. We do have a subsidy scheme now which is enhanced and more realistic around KiwiSaver and Welcome Home Loans. I mean, I think we are more likely to keep interest rates lower than a Labor government, which is known for spending money, certainly alongside the Greens. So I think if you look at our policies, as long with everything else we've been doing, building act reforms, it's a coherent set of policies that will work.
Just on the subsidy element of that policy, sure. Prime Minister, if the problem is too many buyers chasing too few houses,
yep.
Why does it make sense to have even more buyers?
Yeah, so I don't think in one sense you'll necessarily have more buyers. Those people who aren't currently getting the subsidy or weren't eligible, they're still probably arguably looking, but they're frustrated, and there are plenty of frustrated home buyers. But what's going to happen is if the Reserve Bank puts on the speed limits, then it's going to shift the balance of who fits within that speed limit to the very people that we announced in the weekend. So where I saw Shamabel Yakov saying, well, it'll just increase the number of buyers, that's actually not the view of the Reserve Bank looking at the policy. They do agree with us, though. They're more likely to fit within that group that make up the amount that will form the speed limit that the Reserve Bank puts on the commercial banks. Yeah, that's because early on, when we inherited the scheme, there wasn't very much demand for the reasons I pointed out earlier, but also secondly, the conditions were set so tightly, people couldn't actually access it. So even though it was there and it was established, we actually just couldn't actually get people to take up the loans within the framework that was there because the restrictions were too tight. So essentially, we only returned money because it wasn't being used. So you had to change the conditions. Well, there's no evidence to support that, is there? I mean, we're about the middle of the pack of the OECD. Power prices have gone up less under a national government, considerably less than they did under Labor. I think Wallach was out recently saying that a lot of the claims that Labor were making were wrong. I mean, there's been a whole series of different data points you can point to. I mean, what has happened over recent times is there's been more infrastructure built, and actually some of the changes have balanced up, you know, who's paying increases, whether it's businesses or consumers. But under our policies, not only have power prices risen by less, but there's been much greater consumer choice and a lot more consumers changing companies.
Thank you.
About welfare tomorrow? No. Look, I might take my last question. I can ask to go soon. But the look, it's probably better if we just leave it for Paula tomorrow in totality. I mean, I think you'll be able to pick the sort of areas she's going. But I mean, overall, the simple message is we want to provide much greater protection to vulnerable children. And we're prepared to pass some controversial policy to give those youngsters support.
Very quick question.
Yeah, sure. Sorry, what was that?
Timana.
Oh, Timana. Sorry. Yes, yes, yeah. 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 Well, we're one of 27 countries that is providing support in that region, and to be a show of presence, against the risks that are presented by Somali pirates. So 27 nations, we're one of 27, we'll be up there in about November. And look, I think it's important because a lot of New Zealand goods actually travel in the area where those Somali pirates operate. So it makes sense for us to do it. It's part of an overall training exercise. Tomorrow's off to, I think, Australia first and then the Gulf of Aden.
Just on the weekend.
Yeah.
In the breakout, the Defence Minister said that the last $100 million of savings for the Defence Force wasn't likely to go through.
Yep.
Well,
I think it's really important to understand it's not a savings program, at least not one as you might know it, in the sense that it's really been a program that's been about giving more power and authority to defence to spend money where they want by funding that through changes in expenditure in other places. So it's not savings that are returned to the centre, it's the change of expenditure within the portfolio. We haven't made any final decisions, and the Minister hasn't actually brought that to Cabinet yet, but what is true is that I met with the CDF and the Minister some weeks ago, and they did raise with me the issue that the last $100 million is a bit more challenging. Now, we've done a lot of good work in terms of the changes we've made so far. I'm not going to cut off our nose to spite our face. If we don't make those savings in that area, arguably that might give the military less money to spend on some other new initiatives they want, so they'll need to balance all that up. But they're going to come back to us with a set of recommendations to go from here. No, I don't think so. It's just a matter of, they ultimately want new equipment and new areas of expenditure, and they've been given the ability to fund all of that by making savings. They've done a pretty good job so far, but that last little bit's proving to be a bit trickier.
Do you think they overestimated how much savings you
say? No, I think right at the start we always thought some of these things, are a little more challenging. We just need to be careful. And I think it's been part of the way we've handled the restructure of the public service as a general rule. We haven't just, sort of blundered ahead at the sake of all and to sort of to hell with all the consequences. We have been quite cautious and careful. And as I say, there's been a lot of savings achieved, $250-300 million per annum so far. But that last bit, we just need to tread carefully. Yeah, but it's just important that we get it right.
One last quick question on how to get a reserve bank.
Yeah.
They expressed an opinion to you before that they were agreeing with you on the effects of your policy.
Yeah.
Did they also make any points about you leaning against the intent of the overvalue ratio?
I mean, generally they're actually comfortable with what we're doing because, look, in the end we make our decisions and they make theirs and, we're independent of one another. But and we're free to criticise them and they're free to criticise us. But in a way, we're working in the same market with the same objectives. We can understand that the Reserve Bank Governor is doing his level best not to raise interest rates and put pressure on the exchange rate. So cutting across them seems a little confusing to me and not necessarily terribly constructive. So that's why we at least took them through what we were thinking. The reason they're not so concerned, of course, is because the effect of our policy is for people to have a bigger deposit than they otherwise would do and to skew the incentives for the commercial banks to want to fulfil the demand in that area because it's lower risk for them and the Reserve Bank. So actually it fits broadly within what they're thinking. Yeah, but in reality, they'll be a maximum 90% LVR, won't they? Because they'll actually have to have a 10% deposit. So that's not too bad. I mean, it's not 100% anyway, as some LVR has been.
Can I just check quickly with you? Has the inquiry bill been on the order paper for 4 years?
been there a long time. There's been a lot of, there was some work done. It was initially had its reading quite a long time ago. It went off, it's been at the select committee and it's been sitting there. And frankly, it needed to come back anyway. But as we've been getting some advice over the course of probably the last 3 or 4 days, you know, it's been a credible option, which has been either go down a commission of inquiry, or you can't have, put it this way, you can't have a ministerial inquiry with the current terms that apply to ministerial inquiries. Don't just, as would be, has been proven, I think, not effective.
So does that bill need more amendment now?
It could do, yes. So it's possible that there'll be an SOP that would have to be introduced, and we're looking at that. Thanks much.